Hi, I'm Tim Hernandez. Welcome to Words on a Wire. Our guest today is going to be the fantastic poet, Becca J.R. Lachman, who will be talking about her fantastic collection titled Other Acreage, and that's out with Gold Wake Press. Becca's a fantastic writer. You know, I got a chance to meet her when I was in the Bennington Writing Seminars back in the day. And she's based out of Ohio. And, you know, I've been following her work for quite some time. So when her book, Other Acreage, came out, finally ran for it, picked it up, and haven't put it down since. And so I'm just really excited to get to speak with her. She's been influenced by even some of my own favorite writers from my hometown of Fresno. Jean Jansen is a fantastic poet who had some influence of Becca's work. And so there's a kind of a personal home connection there as well. But like I said, she's writing based in Ohio where she teaches as well. I'm looking forward to that conversation, and I invite you to it right now, coming up on Words on a Wire with Becca J.R. Lachman. Becca J.R. Lachman lives with her husband Michael in Ohio, where she spent the last 10 years teaching, tutoring, and writing for Ohio University. She's also a musician. Becca's original works are available through Heritage Press. Other books by Becca include The Apple Speaks, which is out with Cascadia Publishing House, and A Ritual to Read Together, Poems in Conversation with William Stafford, and that's out with Woodley Press. Her many essays and writings and poems have been published in numerous anthologies and journals. And she's also received residencies at the Vermont Studio Center, Ohio Arts Council, Mennonite Arts Weekend, and Gold Wake Family. She's a graduate of the Bennington Writing Seminars, and we welcome her right now. Becca J.R. Lachman, welcome so much to Words on a Wire.
Thank you, Tim. It's good to be here.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. You know, I've been a fan of your writing for, oh gosh, since 2011, since I met you and was familiar with your writing at that time there in Bennington. And since then, I've, you know, looked forward to reading this collection of poetry that was going to come out, Other Acreage, and it's out with Gold Wake Press. Congratulations, first of all, on this fantastic book.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. So before I get into it, I know the book has been out for a little bit, quite some time now. But, you know, like I said, anytime a book gets onto my radar, to me, it's just about trying to get it out into the world as much as possible. And in fact, just a minute ago, there was this lovely woman here in our studio who was here from Germany. And she was talking with me and she said, "What is that?" And so I was telling her about your book and she says, "I'm going to go out and get it." So there it is. So we're doing the work already for you here. See?
Excellent.
It was awesome. But, you know, can you start by maybe giving our listeners just a little bit of background about your book?
Sure. Well, I wrote this book when I knew that there was a good possibility that the farm that had been in my family since the late 1830s was going to be sold outside my family for the first time. And I was just trying to reckon with that. And So I call this book kind of my wailing wall and also an ode elegy to trying to cram everything I could remember about that farm and the people I most associated with it into a book form.
Right. Now, you say that it was in the family since the 1830s?
Yes.
Now, where more or less was this farm located?
Sure. It's in Northeast Ohio.
Northeast Ohio.
And yes, it's about an hour south of Cleveland. It's in Ohio's Amish country.
Wonderful. I mean, that's why the title is so appropriate, Other Acreage, which when I read the title at first and I got the book in the mail, it was like, or I mean, actually, I got it from you directly because I have you signed it. Yeah. When I got the book and I looked at Other Acreage, I thought it was just an intriguing title. And I thought to myself, I wonder what is within this? What types of poems in here? But as I read through it and started to realize that it was very much about land and your sort of family's history on this land. But the word other in this title, Other Acreage, really sort of opens that up then to talking about, you know, various other subjects that, well, that we'll get into. But I think probably it'd be great if our listeners can hear you read a poem from the collection.
Sure. I will start with a poem that actually is a found poem.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from emails and letters and conversations
awesome.
With real people in Kidron, Ohio, where I was raised.
Mm.
And I should also say that part of the reckoning of writing this book was being one of the first in my family to move away from this really tight-knit, homogenous community.
Right.
And so claiming another home in writing was important to me. But it's always good to have some distance from the place you're writing about.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is called Latest Letter.
What page is that on, so I can follow along?
It's on 15.
15. Okay, great. Got it. Go ahead.
Latest Letter. P.S. Corn shorter than usual this late into August. P.S. They've cut down the cedars along Nussbaum Road. Don't know how many locals have missed that turn. P.S. We're still refusing to get a stoplight. P.S. Your neighbor's draft horses nearly drowned in quicksand. Took 6 men and 2 tractors, but they're fine. P.S. Your sister's little ones sure are growing. How long have you been married now? P.S. If only you could see the sun at dusk turn the white barns pink. The best silent movie. P.S. Your parents got caught at the recycling center. It was night. There were wine bottles. P.S. 6 couples at church celebrating their 50th. Now, how long have you been married again? P.S. Remember how tar bubbles up on gravel roads? Well, we're in the thick of it. P.S. That dead G.H. owl in your daddy's plum orchard, it's next in line at the taxidermist. P.S. What meats are you making for your company at dinner? We just can't get enough of your Grandma Ruth's handballs. P.S. Thanks for the note last week. What do you mean by tofu and kefir? P.S. They've changed 606 to 118 in the Blue Mennonite hymnal. There have been letters to the editor. P.S. The Gazette's weekly headline, Pig Causes Traffic Accident. P.S. Your parents said no to buying the farm. How long have you been married? P.S. Hoods burned down the railway bridge and your grandma butchered chicken on the clothesline this morning. P.S. We've got lots of starts for you. Coneflowers, daffodils, creeping phlox. So you can plant something there and it keeps coming back, even if it's in strange ground.
That was fantastic. And if you're just tuning in to Words on a Wire, you are listening to the voice of poet Becca J.R. Lockman reading from her fantastic collection of poetry titled Other Acreage. And that poem was called Latest Letter. Tell us a little bit about the inspiration for that poem, Becca.
Yeah, well, I found myself in this era of many types of communication methods. You know, snail mail was still a really important part of communicating with my elders, my grandmothers especially. And for a time, one of my grandmothers was sending me the little daily newspaper, the Gazette. And I just found that a lot of the stories were so different in that Amish Mennonite community where I grew up to the very dynamic and eclectic college town where I had moved and lived. And so I wanted to document my town in a way, and putting it in that experimental form allowed me to play with it a little bit more.
Right. What I love about this poem, and in fact, I should tell you too, this poem actually was a spark for me. After I read this poem the first time a few days ago, I sat down right away and it, like another poem came to me. So I started to write a poem because after reading this poem.
That's the biggest compliment you can give a poet.
It's true. Absolutely true. I was like, because I love the sort of leaping quality of this poem, you know, that it's just going from one subject to another. And that's kind of what spurred it for me. But, you know, I love this last one here, or this bottom of the first page. What do you mean by tofu and kefir?
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of this book is me grappling with and really claiming an identity as a feminist in this Mennonite tradition.
Yes.
And the dedication for this book, it's for my mom, who wore a prayer covering to church, a mini skirt to college, and at age 60, a divinity school graduation gown. So my mom's now a Mennonite pastor. And, you know, just to mark and celebrate that journey of some of the most important women in my life is definitely a big layer of this book too.
And, you know, that's what I love about this collection and why I found it so unique and in its voice and its subject, because, you know, you mentioned two things, your feminist background and also, you know, your Mennonite background. And those two within this collection, you know, exploring obviously subjects of body and landscapes and history, family, spirituality. You know, how was the process sort of looking at it through those two lenses? What was the writing process like for these poems and this for you?
Oh, man, that's a great question. I'm very grateful to live where I do now, which is about 3 hours south from where I grew up and in many ways a whole different culture. Because I feel like it gives me the space and freedom to write these poems. I'm not sure if I could if I still lived in Kidron.
Mm-hmm.
It's a culture that, and I have to say, I'm, you know, my voice is trying to tell stories from the point of view that, you know, from this white European heritage mm-hmm. layer of the Mennonite Amish story, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but there are so many other layers in the global story.
Right. Sure.
But I think that for me, I grew up being taught that faith and action and community were all the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really hard for me to separate my faith from my writing. And I guess in saying that, my major hope for my poetry, and particularly this book, is that my poems encourage action. So, you know, to bear witness, to preserve some of the voices from this culture, but also to get out there in the world and to live out your belief, whatever that may be.
You know, and I gather some of that even in the first, I think maybe the first or second poem in the collection, Rumspringa. I think it's you return home visiting maybe, and you're in the grocery store and you see a friend of yours or an acquaintance from some time, and you kind of start to talk about the maybe the differences and where you were maybe once a part of this Mennonite community, and now you've sort of distanced yourself. Can you talk a little bit about maybe that poem and also just what, you know, what was behind that?
Sure. Well, Rumspringa is still practiced in Amish communities where they invite their youth, usually around age 16, to go out and experience the world
mm-hmm.
before they decide to join church, which is a lifelong decision.
Right.
And so, you know, their young people are notorious for partying and doing some pretty lame stuff, actually.
Just
but,
like,
you know,
letting loose, completely
right,
going
right.
for it.
Right. But so I grew up going to some of these parties because one of my friends, her dad had been Amish. And so the Mennonite tradition, we don't get Rumspringa.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of expected to be good all the time. but I got to go along to some of these parties.
Gotcha.
And so the poem Rumspringa is about me running into one of those Amish friends that I grew up with that, you know, after eighth grade, I didn't really see her again, except
right.
for these chance meetings.
Right, right. And tell me a little bit too, then how, actually, because there are so many poems here that where you're referencing your family or, I mean, obviously it's in respect to the family farm, the collection, but you know, you talk quite a bit in these poems about family. You know, has your family read the book? I would imagine they have by now. And also, what was their reaction to it?
Yeah. Oh, the question that everyone,
well, yeah, you know,
every writer wants to ask other
that's
writers.
Right. That's right. We all want to know that. We all want to know that we share a similar experience.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So I will say this. For the past decade, I had a strict rule that I would talk to my family about my poems or my essays once they were published. And that was a time when I was really, like I said before, claiming my feminist identity. And I knew if anybody just said anything, I would change it.
Wow.
And I didn't want to do that. And it did bring me, you know, into conflict with a couple of my family members. And so I'm happy to say that I'm now at the point of, you know, I wasn't even sharing my poetry with my husband or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at the point where he is definitely a part of my editing process. And with specific members of my family
mm-hmm.
who asked me, you know, please be more sensitive next time, I'm going to honor that. But at the mm-hmm. same time, I hope they can honor that poems need to be written. And
right.
some poems, you know, poems represent this portrait, if you will, of a person. It's kind of frozen in time. And like what I told my sister, who was one of those people who rightly was asking some questions about
sure.
this collection, you know, that's just one moment of our relationship, and other poems go on to other moments and other parts of who we are.
Well, that's pretty generous of you. It really is, I have to say, because, you know, I've always asked writers this question on air and off the air, you know, because we often obviously pull from our own family, our own experiences, our own lives. And then the ethical question, right, of, you know, whose story does this belong to? And, you know, on
right.
and on. But, you know, I always get a variety of responses to that. And, you know, some writers just feel like it's theirs to write. If they lived it and they were a part of it and it touched them or affected them, then it's theirs to write. And they don't, you know, make any kind of compromises. And I personally kind of don't do that, you know, especially when I'm writing more about other families as well. I start to
mm-hmm.
really But you're right. It's very much, I think, a negotiation or a balancing act between how much of the truth or a truth are we after and how can we write it in a way that is honoring of the situation. And at the same time, though, I'm being true to that situation. At the same time, you know, not wanting to, you know, hurt anybody's feelings or step on any toes, you know. So it's, you know,
exactly.
Kudos to you for that generosity.
Thanks. It's taken a while for me to get here, but yeah. I will say that I like to claim a tiny bit of the reason why this farm was not sold out of the family. My sister and her beautiful family ended up, you know, purchasing the farm and live there now. And it's amazing to see my four nieces and nephews on that land. And my uncle suddenly was interested in saving the barn from falling down. And, you know, this was after my grandma was handing out copies of the book on the community. So, you know, whether it shamed them into it or not, I like to claim a little bit of that journey.
Right. Do you think the poetry a factor in any of that?
I want to say it was.
Nice.
I do, because, you know, this is, you pick up this book, and especially for my family, you know, there's so much of us in these pages.
Poetry that saves the farm. That's great.
Yeah, I hope so anyway. But yeah, it's, you know, I love poem series, which I'm sure you noticed. Mm-hmm. And one of the series in this book is imagining what St. Francis would do if he were alive in our world today. And people ask me, you know, why is Francis in your book? You're Mennonite.
Yeah, right.
And it's because my sister converted to Catholicism at the same time that my mom was becoming a Mennonite pastor.
Wow.
And, you know, some big questions suddenly came up in our relationship. And writing these poems was, in a way, trying to build a bridge back to her, saying, you know, we do have some things in common, or we were raised to believe in the world in the same way in a lot of ways.
Would you mind sharing one of those poems with us?
Sure. I'll read the first poem that I wrote in this series. And most of my poems come out of real life. They document something, usually a story that I've heard. And this one's no different. I heard on the news a clip of a story about the Columbus Zoo when I was in college, and it always stayed with me. And it took about 10 to 15 years to write it.
Wow.
But this is St. Francis, works at the Columbus Zoo. Does a soul really change when we can't see its beginning? We pretend we're in West Africa. Together we talk of rubber trees, how you miss the warm throats of antelopes, a sun so hot the earth smells of distant fires. We imagine our feet calloused from heat, away from the patches of night silver snows in Ohio. Mostly, I'm here to listen, then remind you of your role. Isn't that what we all need from time to time? For someone to notice, say yes. You're living what you were made for. Other workers play poker in the aquarium lobby or sleep near the gift shop after feeding the nocturnals. They only suspect me once, the night two high school boys dared each other to sneak into the polar bear pool before dawn. One boy's hand was already missing by the time they all got there, having heard the screams. I was already in the water, talking, not to the boys, to the bears. Tonight, the same bears are teaching two cubs a creation myth. Describe great walls of ice that they will never see. Remembering only a land of heat, you want to hear this story too. So we follow winding sidewalks to the other side of the world. Animals reach beyond cages. Tuck small flowers in your mane, bush deer and elephant, pepper bird, baboon. Cool cement beneath our feet, distant highways for rivers, street lamps for giraffes. At night, I take off my shoes.
Wow. And that is the voice of poet Becca J.R. Lockman reading from her fantastic collection of poetry titled Other Acreage. That's out with Gold Wake Press. Becca, that's a fantastic poem, and it prompts me to want to ask you, how did poetry find you? How old were you when you first came upon poetry?
Well, like many poets, I came to poetry through music. For a long, long time, I thought I was going to be a professional songwriter. I wanted to write musicals and move to New York City. And the older I got, I studied abroad in college right after 9/11 and found myself writing a lot just to cope and try to make sense of the world. Right. And there was something about poetry that felt riskier and gutsier to me. You know, we have our own music and rhythm and all of that infrastructure built into poetry.
Right.
But I felt more exposed when I was writing it and especially performing it. So I was drawn to that energy and storytelling. And so I came back and started double majoring in English. And my life since then has taken the path to follow words.
To follow words. And do you ever sort of present your poetry but using a musical component to it?
Yes. More and more I'm braiding music into my poems. And I think that collaboration is a really important part of the arts telling human stories. So visual arts as well. But yeah, I make singing a part of most of my readings these days.
Oh, really? Maybe should we get you to sing a song for us? That sounds like an invitation.
Oh, man.
I won't put you on the spot. It's okay.
Sure,
okay. That'd be awesome.
Sure.
Please do.
So one of my teachers that I will never get to meet in this life is William Stafford.
Wow.
And the day that the newscasts were following the youngest, I'll just use the name that we know him by, the youngest Boston bomber, brother, you know, live on the news, I had to go and teach college students who were just about the same age as that young man. And so I decided I was going to memorize one of my poems and also braid it into a William Stafford poem.
Beautiful.
And then I found that the singer-songwriter John Gorka had already set this poem to music. And so this is how I've been starting my readings in the past year. And so it's a setting of William Stafford's at the Unnational Monument along the Canadian border. And the music is by John Gorka. And my poem is All Day I Left the House. All right, Tim, you made me do this.
Lovely. And you are hearing it right now on Words on a Wire.
All right. This is the field where the battle did not happen, where the unknown soldier did not die. This is the field where grass joined hands, where no monument stands, and the only heroic thing is the sky, and the only heroic thing is the sky. All day I let the house be filled with voices on the news. This morning, my body forgives me for this extra layer of violence. Birds fly here without any sound, unfolding their wings across the open. No people killed or were killed on this ground, hallowed by neglect. And an air so tame that people celebrated by forgetting its name. All day I let the house be filled with voices on the news. This morning, my body forgives me for this extra layer of violence. This morning, I leave the house with a half-read book of poems. Hold it beside me, my worry stone. This is the field where the battle did not happen, where the unknown soldier did not die. This is the field where grass joined hands, where no monument stands, And the only heroic thing is the sky. And the only heroic thing is the sky.
And that is the lovely voice of poet Becca J.R. Lachman reading and singing from her collection of poetry titled Other Acreage, and that was out with Gold Wake Press. You must go out and pick up this collection of poetry. It's, trust me, you won't go wrong. We do right by you here at Words on a Wire. So, Becca, you know, it's been such a pleasure having you on our show, and I think we're just about out of time. So, you know, what are you working on now, just briefly? Is there anything that we should be looking out for?
Sure. Yeah, I am trying to get my next collection published. It's a collaboration with the visual artist Astrid Kemmerling,
wonderful,
a German artist based in San Francisco. It's called Homesick.
Homesick.
And I'm also trying to start researching some of my ancestors, including my great-great-grandmother, who was Amish and shunned for having a child out of wedlock.
Wow. Well, we look forward to picking up those books and having you back on our show when they come out. We'll talk about those. And thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you so much, Tim. Onward.
And we'd like to thank our very special guest today, Ohio-based poet, teacher, and musician there, Becca J.R. Lachman. Pick up her fantastic new collection of poetry titled Other Acreage. It's out with Gold Wake Press. Also like to thank our brilliant producer back there, Stefania. Thank you. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. This is Words on a Wire on KTEP 88.5 FM.